Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The tapes this evening are sponsored by the Orbach family, Le'ilei Nishmas Rav Moshe ben Rav Shalom Zalman Zatzal and Etel Sirke Bas Rav Yosef Aleh Shalom. The Pasuk in Shmos by the Seres Adibros describes one of the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Pasuk says, Voseh chesed lo'alofim, Hashem does chesed for 2,000 generations, li'ohavai, to those who are beloved to me, u'lishomrei mitzvosai, and to those who guard my mitzvahs. The Pasuk is basically describing that if a person does what's right and appropriate in Hashem's eyes, then Hashem not only pays back that person, but Hashem pays back that person's children, children's children, children's children, up until 2,000 generations. And this Pasuk comes head on the heels of the earlier Pasuk that says, Pokein avon avos abanim, that Hashem visits the sins of the fathers onto the sons of sons, up until four generations. So apparently, if one does what's ra, what's wicked in the eyes of Hashem, Hashem pays it back for four generations. And here, if a person does what's appropriate, Hashem pays back for 2,000 generations. Rashi says, Shadam osel l'shalom schar o adal payim dor, Hashem will pay back a man his reward for 2,000 generations. And again, earlier the Pasuk told us that Hashem pays back the bad for four generations. Nim says, it comes out, midah tova yisera o midah paranios, it comes out that the midah of goodness, the attribute of kindliness, of goodliness, is increased, is multiplied on the midah of paranios, echad al chameshmios, to the ratio of 1 to 500, shezu le'arbadoros, because Hashem pays back the bad for four generations, and Hashem pays back the good for 2,000 generations. 4 to 2,000 is the ratio of 1 to 500. So Rashi is teaching us that these two psukim teach us that Hashem created the world with a midah of 500 times the good as the bad. The Siftei Chacham says that if you think about this, you'll quickly realize that something is inaccurate here. Because the Pasuk is telling us that Hashem does chesed for 2,000 generations. Says the Siftei Chachamim, we know that Hashem created the world to last for 6,000 years. Now if a generation is 25 years, then the maximum amount of generations that will ever be is 240, not 2,000. So the Siftei Chachamim asks, what's pshat in the Pasuk? What does the Pasuk mean that Hashem will do chesed for 2,000 generations? L'hayav l'niver, there'll never be 2,000 generations. So Siftei Chachamim says that's what Rashi is really pointing out to us. That in fact there will never be 2,000 generations, but Hashem wants to teach us this lesson. That when Hashem created this world, Hashem created 500 times the good in this world than the bad. As if to say, if you do bad, I'll pay you back for four generations. If you do good, now it'll never occur, it'll never happen at the 2,000 generations, but you should just know that that good will carry so far that Lu Yitzur, there were 2,000 generations, that's how far it will carry. And the sole reason why Hashem is teaching us that is to teach us the ratio, 1 to 500. Now very carefully, the Siftei Chachamim is saying that this is in this world. His question is that there aren't 2,000 generations in this world. He doesn't answer, well, there's Olam Haba. His answer is, you're right, there isn't. But Hashem is teaching us the lesson that Hashem created this world with the ratio of one bad to 500 times the good. And that's the lesson that Rashi wants to teach us. Now, when you hear a Rashi like this, if you think about it, I think there is a radical problem with it. And that is, are there many people you know who can honestly say that their life is 500 times the good as the bad? Most people that you'll meet will say, okay, life's good. I mean, there's good, there's bad. All right, on balance, I guess I have more good than bad. But 500 times the good to bad, that's to say, for every stomach ache that you get, for every toothache, there's literally 500 times the pleasure and the tremendous hanas and satisfactions. I don't think it fits the reality that we live. By the way, 500 to 1 means it's so outmeasured. Next time you look on a map and you see the scale 500 to 1 and you see it's a little line, but you see it's a huge town, that means 500 to 1 is so overshadowed, so overpowers the one that you barely see the one. Are there many people you know who can honestly say that their life is so much pleasure, so much anah, that they barely see the pain? So the problem is trying to bring this Rashi into our reality. So to do that, I'd like to spend a little time this evening on a concept that is very foreign to many of us, at least from a Torah perspective, and that is the concept of pleasure. And let me start with a mashal Chovos Avos gives. He says, imagine a man who at 35 years of age becomes blind. Now he has to recreate his entire life. He has to start from scratch. He has to relearn all of those activities that he's done before. He has to rebuild his entire existence. And he does it. He's a fighter. He recreates his life and he goes on. And he lives this way for 10 years. After the time passes, he hears about an experimental procedure that, if successful, could reconnect the optic nerve and regain him his sight. But if it fails, then he could die. He discusses it. He thinks about it. He goes through the back and forth. Finally, he brings his family into the room and tells them he's made his decision. He's going ahead with it. The day of the operation, they wheel him into the hospital operating room. They put him under. And after a long 10-hour procedure, they take him out. And he's beginning to come to consciousness, and he's about to get ready for that moment. He's about to open his eyes and find out how he's going to spend the rest of his life. He steels himself, and he readies himself, and he opens his eyes, but they don't move. They don't budge. He screams out, "Nurse, nurse, what's the problem? What's the problem? I can't open my eyes. I can't." Relax, relax. The stitches have to heal. It needs 3 days. So he waits. 3 long days he waits, not knowing what's going to happen. Finally, with the doctors and nurses at his bed, with his family gathered around, the surgeon comes by, peels off the first bandage, peels off the second bandage, and says, "Open your eyes." And he opens his eyes and he sees colors, he sees depth, he sees objects. He looks out the window and he sees a meadow. He sees a beautiful green grass-filled meadow. He sees trees. He sees birds. He sees the sky. He looks back into the room and he sees his family, faces that he hasn't seen for 10 years. With tears coming down his eyes, he says to the doctor, "Doctor, doctor, what could I ever do to repay you for what you've given me?" That sense of immense pleasure, of joy, of being able to see, is something that a person is supposed to think about. Not once in a lifetime, not once a year, but it's something that a person should be dwelling on, thinking about once a day. As a matter of fact, we have a bracha that we make in the morning. It's called Pokeach Ivrim. Pokeach Ivrim means Baruch At Hashem, blessed be you Hashem, Pokeach Ivrim, who opens up the eyes of the blind, meaning I'm supposed to think about that. Before I make that bracha, I'm supposed to understand that sight is a gift. It's a matana. It's a present. Hashem has given it to me, and I'm supposed to be nene. I'm supposed to enjoy it. And my friends, I think that if we think about it, there are many, many pleasures that we take for granted, that we not only take for granted, we don't even think about. We don't even recognize and realize. We human beings are a bit of a curious breed. We could have presents, gifts, blessings for years and years, never even think about it. The minute it's taken, the minute a guy breaks his leg, Hashem, why me? Of the 6 billion people on the planet, why'd you pick me? Now, until that point, there wasn't one thank you, one recognition of it being from Hashem. But more than that, there wasn't even an understanding that it was a good. But the reality is, in Baruch Hashem, we have fingers with which to feel, eyes with which to see, ears with which to hear, a tongue with which to taste, and our life is greatly enhanced, tremendously enriched, because of all of the sensations that we enjoy. And it takes a wise man to train himself to not just live, but to experience and enjoy the wonders that Hashem put in the world. But that's the problem. The problem is that ever since the time I'm a little kid, it's always been there. I mean, there's always been fingers and hands and sights and like, what's the big deal? It doesn't move me because that's the way it's always been. So I want to share with you something, an observation that I think may help a little bit with this point. When my daughter Ricky was 6 years old, we were having a discussion. And she said to me something very interesting. She had been learning about Maisa Bereishis in Yeshiva, and she said to me, you know, Abba, I understand before Hashem created the world, there was nothing. I understand there was nothing, there wasn't even light, there wasn't dark, there was nothing, but Abba, what color was it? Now, it's an interesting question, and I'll tell you why. Because if you try to envision nothingness, if you close your eyes and try to imagine vast emptiness, complete absence of physicality, what you typically see in your mind's eye is blackness. But black implies the absence of something. But there wasn't anything to hold the something in. When I say there was no physicality, there were no electrons, no molecules, no atoms, no quarks, there was nothing physical, nothing to contain the blackness, there was no color, there was nothing, absolute, complete void. And from nothing, from no point in space, no point in time, Hashem brought forth everything that we see. And that step is a critical step for a person to think about. Because when a person does that critical step of thinking that before Maisa Bereishis it was nothing, then a person recognizes that everything that Hashem brought forth had a purpose and had a reason. And once a person does that critical step, I think they'll soon come to a very interesting observation. Many of the features that we find in the physical world have no functional purpose. From a utilitarian standpoint, as in what they do for a living, what they do for a profession, for a job, many, many of the features that we experience in this world did not have to be. And I'll give you a classic example. In the world is something called color. Gentlemen, color did not have to be. Now, I'm going to date myself with this one, but when I was a kid growing up, there was something called black and white TV. You ever hear about those? You read about them in museums, you know, in ancient history, you know, black and white TV worked. It really worked. You could really, and it was even easier than modern TV, you know why? Because it was easy to tell the good guy and the bad guy. The good guy was white, the black guy was black, and there was everything in between. The grayscale was just everything in between. But you could watch the whole drama, the whole human dimension, everything was there to be seen. And you could understand it all, relate to it all. So why in the world didn't Hashem just create the world in black and white? You know what the answer is? There is no functional advantage. It is not a better world, but there is one advantage, and that it's more fun to watch a color TV than it is to watch a black and white. Life is greatly enhanced when you see the greens and the reds and the yellows and the oranges because it's prettier to look at. No functional advantage, strictly an enhancement for our enjoyment. When my kids went to pre-1A, I made a discovery. Do you know when they brought home that box of 100 markers, there are 4 shades of teal. Now in the world, I don't know what anyone needs with 4 shades of teal and let alone markers, but that was not the grand discovery. The grand discovery was if you'll open up Microsoft Word and you'll study the program carefully, you'll note that you have the option of 16 million colors in every different gradation and shade than you have the choice. Not only did Hashem create an entity called color, there's such a vast spectrum so that when you watch a sunset, you'll see the oranges and the reds with the shades and the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful expanding colors, which is vastly different than the ocean blue, dramatically different than looking at a gorgeous mountain. All of it, all of the natural beauty that you see has almost no functional advantage for the Bria. It's there for one reason, so that you should look at a mountain and say, wow, that's magnificent, it's beautiful, and you should take hana, you should take pleasure from it. And I think it's an eye-opening observation because what it means is that Hashem invested an awful lot of wisdom, care into creating a beautiful world. And again, if you study the world, you'll find magnificent beauty, much of which is superfluous. You know, Shavuos, we stay up all night, and I find it very, the davening the next morning is basically like thrown out. I mean, I barely stay awake. In fact, I rarely sit down because I know if I sit down, I'll be asleep. I fooled even myself this couple of Shavuos ago. I was standing up trying to stay awake, and I fell asleep standing up. And it happened to be that I was, I guess, towards the bima, and when I opened my eyes, I started laughing. I started laughing because on the bima was this huge bouquet of flowers. And I just saw something that was so superfluous. You see the orchids and the shapes of the petals and the beautiful colors and arrangements. And I said to myself, it didn't have to be. Not only didn't have to be, it serves no purpose. Do you know that the bee is largely colorblind? It's certainly not attracted to the color of the flower. It's attracted to the pollen. The deep reds, the purples, the yellows, the gorgeous, gorgeous colors of bouquets are not there for the wild kingdom. They're there for man. And when you study the petal shapes and you understand how much science went into designing the cellular walls to be structurally strong so that it holds the pleat and holds the fold and holds out this way, you say to yourself, Ribbono del Makula, without a utilitarian functional purpose for one reason, so that man should look at it and say, wow, it's beautiful, and man should take pleasure from it. And I think that's an important yesod to understand. That much, much of what we experience, much, much of what we take for granted has been created for our enjoyment. And here's an observation that I think really brings this point home. The Steip Lagon, in his Musa Sefer, makes an observation. He says, food serves the purpose of providing nutritional needs for health, energy levels. Hashem created food. By all rights, all food should taste like soggy cardboard. After all, if you're hungry, you're going to eat it and ingest it. What else do you need? Yet if you note, foods come in so many different tastes, textures, aromas, flavors, colors, such a vast array of different flavors of food. Why is it that Hashem put all of the different flavors, textures, and aromas to food? Again, if man were hungry, he would eat it. But the answer is, eating brown beans all day, every day, 365 days a week is boring. So Hashem added all of the flavors and all of the colors and all of the aromas to food for one reason. Not so man will eat, he would have eaten anyway, but so that when you sit down to eat, you should have anah, you should enjoy it. Not functional, strictly for pleasure. And I once heard Rabbi Miller, Allah Shalom, describe an orange. And you probably remember this from grade school. If you ever remember as a little kid peeling the orange open, you'll see the little wedges, maybe 12, 14 wedges. And if you were bored during science class or whatever it was, you probably sat there peeling the membrane of the single wedge. And you'll note that inside the wedge are a few hundred little juice sacks. Do you ever wonder why it is that Hashem created the orange in that way with the membrane and the juice sacks? Keep in mind, watermelon is 95% water. More water content than the orange. Yet it's structured very differently without those little juice sacks. Why is it that Hashem made those little juice sacks? So I believe Rabbi Miller explained it's similar to the reason why if you'll see little children's candies that have the juice center and you'll see the advertisement, burst in, bite in for a burst of flavor. Well, when you bite into that wedge of orange, what happens is those little micro sacs burst out so that there's an explosion of flavor in your mouth, an enhanced experience. You see, it wasn't enough that the taste of the orange had to be that beautiful, sweet, tangy taste. Hashem wanted to add an enhancement, so he made a different delivery system so that when you bite into the orange, there's a burst of flavor, it hits your palate so that you should further enjoy that experience. You would have eaten the orange anyway, the taste would have been there, but that burst of flavor would have been lacking. Therefore, Hashem custom designed the juice sacks in the orange. And if you think about it, there's an awful lot in the food that we eat that was strictly created for our pleasure. An observation. What color is an apple? Now don't answer that one, because it's actually a trick question. Why? Because I only found this out when I took my kids apple picking. There are 7,500 varieties of apples. Now you do not need more than one. One apple, an orange, a banana, a pear, some grapes, that'll do it. There are 7,500 variations of apples. Why? Because a Cortland apple is a very different taste than the Granny Smith, very different than the Red Delicious, very different than the Cortland, each one with a very different taste. But note that not only does each fruit have a different taste, they also have different colors. Why is the Red Delicious a bright red color? The answer to that question can be found in any supermarket in this country. If you go down the laundry detergent aisle, you'll note that Tide is in that bright neon orange color. And it's always in that color because Procter & Gamble spent millions of dollars discovering, researching which color has the greatest eye appeal. And they did study after study that shows that housewives will reach for that neon orange color first because it's nice, it's enjoyable, has an appeal. Hashem made oranges orange, apples red, bananas yellow, so that when you look at it, you should enjoy it. It did not have to be. They could have all been brown. You still would have had the flavor and taste, but Hashem wanted to make another enhancement to the enjoyment, so Hashem changed the color. The next time you see the Cheerio box, it's been in that same gaudy yellow color for 40 years, that mustard yellow color, that's probably atrocious. No one understands that's why Hashem made broccoli green, tomatoes red, cucumbers green, because it has an appeal. Eating the apple is a very different experience than eating the orange, but not just in flavor, the texture. Again, when you bite into the orange, you get that burst, but that's not the experience that you get when you bite into the apple. When you bite into the apple, you get that crunch. Now, do you ever wonder why is it that Hashem made the apple with the crunch? So I think that answer, too, can be found in your local supermarket. You will find an entire aisle, 75 feet long, floor to ceiling, with breakfast cereals, each one bragging to be crunchier than its neighbor. Ours is crunchy. No, ours is crunchy. Ours is so crunchy, we've included air plugs for the rest of your family. Please close your windows so you don't wake up your neighbors. Right? Now, why is it that each cereal manufacturer is bragging that theirs is the crunchiest? What reason? Anyone? The reason is because it's fun. It's fun to bite into a crunchy bowl of cereal. My kids, if the milk is in 20 seconds too long, oh, it's soggy, but forget it, I can't enjoy it. It's fun. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed the cellular walls of the apple to be rigid so that when you bite into it, you get that texture of crunch because Hashem wanted to add an enhancement. It wasn't enough that the flavor of the apple was distinct. It wasn't enough that the color was different. It had to have this added dimension so that when you crunch into it, you should enjoy it further. Rather, an interesting observation about the care and concern that Hashem put into this Bria strictly so that you should enjoy. Another observation. The next time you're sitting down to your favorite food, it's Shabbos, and it's whether it's a chicken soup or the chalent, whatever it may be, and you find you have a cold and you cannot taste it. It momish is bland, you can't taste it, and you can't figure it out. Why is that? Now, scientists tell us that 90% of our taste comes through us through our sense of smell. If you have a cold and you're plugged up, you cannot taste it because the experience is limited. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created each food with a markedly different aroma. See, it wasn't enough that the color was different. It wasn't enough that the texture was different. It wasn't enough that the flavor was different. Hashem put in an aroma into each food. Now listen to this observation, another Rabbi Miller observation. He said as follows, before you eat that orange, what happens? You peel the orange. When you break the peel with your thumb, what happens? You get that spray mist. Now do you ever notice that if you taste your fingers, that spray is bitter, not sweet at all, yet you smell the aroma of the orange. Contained within the skin of the orange is microcapsules, tiny little capsules containing a liquid which holds only the fragrance, but none of the flavor, because those have been designed for one purpose, so that you should smell before you eat the orange. Now, do you ever wonder why is it that you need to smell the orange before you eat it? The answer really is quite simple. Because when you smell an orange, you hunger for the orange. When you hunger for the food, your experience of eating it will be further enhanced. You hear what's going on here? The flavor had to be different because Hashem wanted you to enjoy the orange different than the apple, different than the banana, different than the pear. The delivery system, the burst of flavor had to be different so you should have an enhancement. The color had to have the appeal. The aroma had to be there, but more than that, it wasn't enough. So Hashem added these micro capsules strictly for the purpose that you should break the skin, smell it, hunger for the orange so you should have further hana, further enjoyment when you sit down to eat this orange. And if a person thinks about this, I think it brings them to a tremendous understanding that much of this world has been designed and created not for its utilitarian, for its functional purposes, but for man to have pleasure, for man to enjoy. And I think if a person looks at the world in which we live, and a person looks out and sees the vastness of the different features and all of the many, many different things that Hashem put in this world, you'll soon see that much of it was strictly for man to have hana. And I believe that that's pshat in this Rashi. You know what Rashi's saying? Rashi's saying that Hashem created this world, Olam Hazeh, with the following ratio. 500 times the good to the bad. For every stomachache, every toothache, every worry and every trouble that you have, there's 500 times as much good. You may say, I don't see it that way. I don't experience it. That's because of one reason. Not because the pleasures aren't there, but we're not trained to experience them. We pass through and we never even recognize what it is, why it was created. So avad, there's no hana, there's no pleasure, because whatever, this is just, it's a busy, busy world and I got no time to take pleasure. But if a person would stop, train themselves, they would see a vast amount of things put in the world for their pleasure, and a person would learn to enjoy this world. Now, gentlemen, I want you to hear good what I'm saying. I train my children when they're little kids. We go in the summer and we do something. You ever hear the expression, stop and smell the flowers? My kids stop at the flowers and smell them. And I'm willing to bet you that not only haven't you smelled flowers in a long time, I'll bet you don't know how to. Most people, when they go over to a flower, I don't really smell much. You don't even know how to smell a flower. So I'll show you. I'll teach you how to smell a flower. When you go over to the flower, the key to understand is that your sense of smell is very delicate. And if you take in a huge burst of air besides sneezing, you're just not going to enjoy the smell. The smells waft, they gently float, and you have to gently just allow it to come up your nostrils. You have to allow it to just sort of filter up. And when you do that, and you concentrate, what that means is stop and concentrate, you'll find that flowers have remarkably delicious smells to them. Remarkably different, varied, and there's a tremendous amount of hana. And I'll tell you something else of interest. If you'd like to test me on this one, take a friend of yours to a fancy restaurant. I mean, the place has got to be gorgeous, the food's got to be extraordinary, and ask him by the third bite if he even knows what he's eating. The answer is, I doubt it. And I'll explain to you what I mean. Watch what happens. The waiter brings in a steak. It's thick. You cut it. It's like butter. It goes, oh, you chew it. It's delicious. Wow, wow. The first bite, you're really there. You're paying attention. The second bite, you're already back to the conversation. By the third bite, you don't know if you're eating lettuce, tomatoes, steak, or peanut butter. You're spaced out. And I think that's a chasaron. Hashem invested a huge, huge amount of wisdom and care to create the foods we eat so that we should be nana, we should enjoy. But that means you have to stop and learn how to enjoy. You have to identify which part of your tongue tastes the sweet sensation, which part of your tongue tastes the salt, which part of your palate enjoys the different flavors. You have to identify the taste as it goes down your throat, which is remarkably different than any other part of the eating experience. I had a friend of mine who's a ger, and he told me an interesting line one day. He said the big challenge for him when he was considering gerus was it meant that he had to give up dry red wine. He was a very, very learned connoisseur, and he had even drank some $1,000 bottles of wine, and for him to have to give up dry red wine was a nisayon. When he told me that, I said, that's it. I have to learn how to drink red wine. If there's that much hanah that he's actually in a sign whether he's going to be Jewish or not, I have to learn how to do it. And you'll note that there's an art to learning how to enjoy red wine. Now, I'm not advocating, I'm not telling you guys to go out and learn how to do this necessarily, but Hashem put a vast amount of pleasures in this world. And I will tell you this, you should learn how to taste an apple. And I did it this morning. This morning, by the third bite, I said to myself, wait a minute, what are you doing? Stop. Taste the apple. Taste the peach flavor. Taste the fragrance. Taste the aromas. Whatever you read on the back of the bottle of red wine, you hear all those descriptions. It's that same depth of aroma and flavor that exists in almost every fruit that you eat. And I believe the next time you sit down to a Shabbos meal and somebody brings out that big salad and you say to yourself, Ribbono Shel Olam kulo, what in the world? What in the world did Hashem have to create lettuce and cucumbers and tomatoes and each one different and each one varied with colors and texture? It didn't have to be then. If you stop and train yourself to enjoy the crunch, enjoy the flavor, enjoy the different texture, and ask yourself, why did Hashem do it? And maybe you even come to the kasha that I have no answer to. Why did Hashem create the banana with that mushy sort? I don't have an answer to that one. There's not much hanah that I can see, but I guess some people say for babies, I don't know. The point is that there's so much out there that Hashem put for one purpose, for you to be nene. And we're not, and that's akasha. And the solution to that is to stop and do it. Stop and learn how to eat. Stop and learn how to look at sights. Stop and watch the sea. Go out to a sea and study and say, wow, this is majestic, it's beautiful. And there's a point to that. Not only so that a person will see beauty, not only so that a person will enjoy this world, but ultimately that will bring a person to a tremendous, tremendous love of Hashem. Because if I see how much care, how much concern Hashem has for my daily life, how much effort and wisdom went in so that I should enjoy this world, that brings a person to an understanding of the, to some extent, of the midas of Hashem, and understanding the love and concern that Hashem has for a person. And I believe that's exactly what Rashi's saying. Rashi's teaching us 500-1 is this world. This world. If you don't see it, and by the way, I've taught high school enough years. Ask the average high school guy, how's life? Life stinks. Life doesn't stink. Your attitude stinks. But it's not your attitude. It's you haven't trained yourself. Your life does stink. Because you're not taking any of the pleasures in this world that Hashem put in this world for you to enjoy. Hence, it does stink. But I have one more observation. Imagine for a minute the following. Imagine you're lost in the desert. For 3 days, you haven't eaten a morsel of food. Finally, you stop at a tree somewhere. It's a bare shrub. And you see a sandwich bag. It's a brown sandwich bag. And you can't believe your eyes. And you open it up and you pull out a peanut butter sandwich. But this peanut butter sandwich has been sitting in the desert sun for 6 months. It's so dry and brittle. The first, you don't chew it, you don't swallow it, you just gobble it. You quickly gobble it down faster than anything. How much pleasure do you think you had when you ate that peanut butter sandwich? You know, the crackly crunch and the dry peanut butter as it's stuck to the palate of your parched throat. I will guarantee that you ate that peanut butter sandwich with a whole lot of passion, with a whole lot of hunger, but I'm willing to bet you that you had very little pleasure from that activity, because dry peanut butter sandwiches are just not much pleasure. And that, my friends, is a very key and important distinction. Passion and pleasure. Passion means taiva, hungers, desires. Pleasure is that experience that you have whilst you're doing that activity. And people oftentimes confuse the two. They mistake pleasure for passion and passion for pleasure. And I want to tell you a great yesod. Passion, taiva, drives and desires are very, very dangerous. The Torah warns us about them, and the Torah cautions us about them, and a person has to be ever on guard. Pleasures are a totally different thing. Pleasures are free. Pleasures are to be enjoyed. Pleasures are things that Hashem put into this world for man to be neneh from, for man to enjoy. One has to be careful because the pleasures and the passions oftentimes mix. But if a person trains himself to use pleasures in this world, then he enjoys this world as Hashem intended. He grows and it doesn't cost him. It doesn't hurt him. I had a friend of mine who was a big masmid when he was in yeshiva. The guy was very, very disciplined, ate very carefully, and he barely ever took a break. Every couple of months, he would go to the candy machine and buy a candy bar. And I found out why. If he was down or just, you know, needed a break or something, he would treat himself to a chocolate bar. And he stopped and enjoyed it. He stopped the busyness of his whole life and enjoyed the flavor, the texture of chocolate. And he used, did you hear the word? He used the pleasure in this world for a very sublime, for a very holy, great purpose. And it doesn't cost, it doesn't hurt. A person grows from that tremendously. And now I want to share with you what may be the biggest chiddush that people never, ever get straight. There is a concept in religion called asceticism. Denial of pleasure. The concept of being a stoic, of denying all earthly pleasures. That is a concept in religions that have no shaychus to Judaism. If you want to be a good Catholic, you can follow such a behavioral path. If you want to be a monk and go up to the Tibetan mountains, you can follow such a path. There is no shaychus. There is no connection in Judaism to asceticism, to denying pleasure. It's not part of the Torah. It's not part of the system. It ain't there. There is a concept, if you're on a very lofty, high madrega, as in the Tanoim, that you'll deny even basic pleasures, but it's nowhere, nowhere near for the average mortal man. In fact, there is a Gemara in Yerushalmi that says clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have tainas against us if we didn't take pleasures from this world. That means if we didn't train ourselves to enjoy that grapefruit, if we didn't train ourselves to enjoy that fruit, if we didn't train ourselves to enjoy the food and the sights and the colors and all of the majesty and the beauty of the world, Hashem will have a taina. Why didn't you use my world? I created it for you. I made all these things so you should enjoy. And if a person lives a Torah lifestyle, obviously his olam haba is going to be much greater, but his olam haza is going to be much greater. What's the first thing a guy says? Listen, the Torah is so restrictive. All these rules and regulations. I want to enjoy myself in this world. Gentlemen, I want to tell you it's pashut. If a person adheres to the Torah system, he will have a much, much enhanced, much greater olam haza than will another human being who's free and hefker. And you'll excuse me for an obvious example. Anyone who's been married more than 1 year will quickly relate to this. And those are the laws of Nida. Reb Meir says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the laws of Nida so that the Kala should be welcomed to her husband with that same passion a wife should throughout marriage be welcomed to her husband. Husband should desire his wife the same way the Chassan desires the Kala. And it's an amazing thing. 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. It's so restrictive. The religion is so difficult. It's so hard. Yet, ask a person, what happens if you don't do this? Amazingly, what's the rage now amongst the psychologists? The first time there's trouble in the marriage in the secular world. Ask a secular psychologist if there's a marriage on the rocks. One of the first recommendations they make is, why don't you try separating for 2 weeks? What are you separating, living different? No, just physically. Don't touch each other for 2 weeks. Why? Because amazingly, the appetites grow, and there's more pleasure when you're together, and oftentimes that's one of the key ingredients in reigniting a successful, happy marriage. Now, doesn't it sound counterintuitive? The Torah is so restrictive and so demanding. 2 weeks, I finally got married. I finally have an outlet, right? Now you're further restricting me 2 weeks off. But the Torah understands the human being because Hashem created the human being, And Hashem created the human being to live a very structured, enjoyable life. Following the Torah system will greatly enhance your stay. And that's one of the great yesods that Rashi is teaching us. If your life stinks, you have to take stock and you have to train yourself to enjoy. You have to make sure your life's in order. You have to make sure your life's on track, because if you're living without purpose, without meaning, obviously you're not going to be happy. But at the end of the day, you should take great pleasures from this world, because Hashem put it in this world. 500 times the good to the bad, so that a man should enjoy. A man should wake up in the morning, open his eyes and say, wow, pokeach ivrim, I have eyes with which to see, fingers with which to feel, legs with which to walk, and have tremendous, tremendous pleasures and honor. Thank you, Hashem. But a person has to train themselves, break out of the busyness, get accustomed to this, and do the great task of training themselves. I want to finish with one observation. Mr. Lasharm is very clear when he says that Hashem did not create this world for our purpose here. In fact, he says that any thinking person will soon recognize that it's impossible. It's impossible to accept that Hashem created this world for our purpose here. Rather, Hashem put us on this planet for a few short years to grow, to accomplish, so that we'll do the task of making ourselves into who we'll be for eternity. When we leave this planet, then we'll be in Olam Haba. That is a place of enjoyment. This world is a place of work. That world is a place of enjoyment. And gentlemen, if you dwell on this point, I think you'll hear something very, very deep. This world that we're in is a world of work. It's a place that's created for one purpose, that man should grow. It is not the place for pleasure. If in this world Hashem invested so much care, so much wisdom in all of the features, in all of the different systems, the delivery systems and the flavors and everything, could you imagine what Olam Haba is like? You see, this world is not for enjoyment. The enhancements are just because Hashem wanted to give something extra. But could you imagine if Hashem, with all of His wisdom, and Hashem, with all of His understanding, created a world for one purpose, for man to enjoy? Could you imagine unending pleasure, waves and waves of pleasure, one intermixed and intermingled with the other, being enveloped in total, complete pleasures without headaches, without worries, without daigas, in a body, in a personage, in a essence that's a klima kabel pleasure, that can receive pleasure in a world created for that purpose? Could you imagine that? If you want to imagine it, just study the orange, study the apple, study the banana, but do that which most people never learn to do. Don't act like a behemoth. You see, Elsie the cow, when she sits there grazing the grass, I do not think gets much pleasure. I don't think Elsie the cow chews on the grass and says, Kentucky bluegrass. Tastes much like the 87 crop that grew over there on the other side of the mountain. Elsie the cow is bovine. She eats without thought, without contemplation, without understanding. Most people go through life that way. If you sit down to a 5-pound box of Entenmann cookies and gobble until there's no end, and you finish the box, I cannot guarantee you had very little hana in that activity. What do you mean, hana? I had so much hana, 5 pounds of Entenmann cookies, what could be better? I guarantee you had little hana. You had a lot of passion, a lot of taiva, you were eating without a stop, but I highly doubt that you had much pleasure. If you would like a word of advice how to have pleasure, use the Rambam system. Stop eating right before you're satisfied, but eat every morsel with the intention of enjoying it. Stop to enjoy your food. Stop to enjoy it. And right before you're satisfied, stop. You'll be fit. You'll be healthy. You'll enjoy this world. And you won't be damaged by the pleasures Hashem put in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us to give. Hashem wants us to enjoy. Olam Haba is the ultimate place of enjoyment. If you want to understand Olam Haba, look at this world, because this world is passing, yet Hashem wants us to enjoy even this. But Hashem wants us ultimately to be happy and even this world enjoy. If a person trains himself with the Torah system and studies this world, Hashem will grant the person great pleasures, not just in Olam Haba, in this world as well. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us the wisdom and strength to appreciate that which Hashem put into this world for our enjoyment.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all the Shmoozin' free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax-deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.